Australian Survivor.
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
Survivor. Wizards.
21 South Africans.
12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
20 middle.
Give me the swamalais.
£1 million.
Million euro.
Million.
Shkali. 1 million. Rubli.
Tribe spoke.
Tribe
spoke.
Tribe top
there.
Ship.
Tribe spoke.
Hello everyone, Shannon Garcia getting you ready for our coverage of Survivor South Africa's Return of the Outcast Finale Week Exit Interview. Now, why am I saying exit interview, not exit interviews, plural? Let me explain the postseason coverage and what's going on with that. So for the finale week, we did an exit interview, an extended exit interview with Kehlani. That's what you're about to hear at almost an hour. So that was a great conversation. Hope that you enjoy that. And then we didn't do exit interviews with the final four because we do have a postseason deep dive schedule with the final four. Also hoping to chat to Steffi and working out some of that coverage and who we'll be talking to. But the final four, definitely we'll be having some hopefully pretty extensive deep dive. So you can look out for the winner. Spoiler alert, hope that you know if you're listening to this, but winner chat with Dino, which should, we're blocking out some time with that, but that will be coming around the midweek of the week after the finale. So you can look out for that and then the rest of the final four and then whatever other conversations we're going to have. I will say as well that if these last 6 weeks were very hectic with how much content we were bringing you and how much content Survivor South Africa was bringing you, very fair if you didn't get to the X interviews, but I do recommend going back if you didn't have time because they're great conversations. We were doing 20, 30 minutes from the jump, got up to like around like 30, 40 every single time. And then by the end, like the Tajian interview is very much like just really a deep dive over an hour, very worthwhile conversation. And they're all great. A lot of insights and still very, very relevant after the season. So if you're looking for something to listen to, I do recommend going back to those X interviews if you didn't get them at the time. We do also have a 5-hour finale recap with me and Mike. That was so much fun as always. We are hyped up about how much fun we had with the season and how great it's been to experience it with the community. So a lot of stuff for you to listen to. I will leave you with this extended interview with Kehlani and then the postseason coverage coming in hot, the deep dive with Dino, and then so much more to come. But thank you so much for joining us on the ride. As always, we appreciate you. Enjoy this conversation and I will see you on the other side. Kehlani, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. I know your story has inspired so many for me right from the preseason through even now to your Ponderosa video, and that moment that you had with Steffi is something that I hope all of the fans check out. Just so incredible what you've been through and what I think you wanted to achieve in the preseason in terms of inspiring others on the outside and just showing them the power of resilience and that strength through some incredible hardship. So thank you so much for sharing that journey with us on the show, and thank you as well for coming onto the podcast so we can get some more of your insights from the show.
Absolutely. Thank you. You make it what it is. You put it out there to them. So without you, we are nothing. And I appreciate that.
Thanks so much, Kehlani. Well, I've got so many questions. We need to hear a little bit more about your thinking through the show because we got a little bit less of it this season. So I've got a lot I want to know. And I want to start at the beginning on early on Tao with those first dynamics we see with like the Tanya vote. You know, it's a bit of a blob. We don't really see those factions until they come out later. Who were your very early positive relationships? Where did you see those really clear, concrete bonds from the beginning?
So there wasn't in the beginning a clear, concrete bond because there were so many options. I was literally bombarded with propositions from every direction. And it's something I shared in my confessionals with content. I said, oh my goodness, I'm bombarded. And the reason I feel I was really bombarded is because I went in with a very open heart and a very friendly attitude and resorted to my personality in real life, which I didn't do in season 5. I went into season 5 like a competitor going into a competition. And that was my problem. So this time around, I opened myself up to everyone, which kind of put me in a bit of a tailspin. So initially, Tanya approached me and she's like, we have so much in common and I really like your demeanor. And based on that, I will always give anyone a chance because I liked what I was hearing. And as the hours went in the day, not even the days, as the hours went in the day, there was this fanatic, frantic scrambling going on, which I thought was quite unnecessary. Because we hadn't even made our shelter, which I thought was paramount importance for comfort and all those things. And as you predicted, I realized this was not that an important thing. going down with this tribe. And so I stepped back and I thought, rather than being like on Survivor season five, let's do the shelter. I tried a little bit. I realized, nope, empower them. They can do it and take a back seat and watch. And so Tanya just was relentless. And I thought, you know, she's really putting targets on our backs. And I said to her, Tanya, there's too many, you're putting too many targets on our backs. We need to be more stealth because we may not fit in with the general consensus. They are very young. And yes, you have a point. We have age and, you know, in common. But at the same breath, we have to keep a sort of a low profile because of it. If we go into the forefront and we're punting and we can be seen as punting, we become targets whether you like it or not. That's what's going to happen. And it was fruitless. I tried for hours to say, we've discussed it. We're going to go forward as a team. You find the people you say you're going to find. Come back to me with names and let's play around with those names. And it just wasn't happening. It was just every time I went to the water, big discussion again. The same thing. It never changed. Mm-hmm. There wasn't anything new. By day two or day three, I thought, oh, I've got to get off this train with no brakes, because if I don't, I'm going to go down and I might actually be thrown under the train tracks by her, who put a target on her own back and then put me in the forefront, because that's her personality. She's very boisterous. She's very in front. And I don't operate like that in this game anyway. And over the years, I've sort of mellowed out. So I ditched Tanya, and that's where that whole scenario with Torizo came in,
yeah,
with Shona.
Yeah.
And I actually jumped ship. I jumped to them for a bit, but I was also running on the outside of Tevin's group. And Tevin had a few people, including Dino and a couple of other guys, working with him. And he was also playing kind of in your face, but not loud. Just you could see who he was going off with. And I thought, okay, when he approached me, he was one of the people that approached me and said, I'd like to bring you into the fold and treat you like a sister going forward in the game. And he pitched the whole end game to me. Now, I'm not foolish enough to believe every end game that I hear. But I took it at face value, because it worked for me to have two turbines going where I could jump to either one, depending on one, my instinct and what I hear in the interim. And in the interim, I heard that Tevin was telling everybody that story. So I thought, ooh, when they said, let's put his name up to vote after Tanya went, I thought, okay, that makes perfect sense. I'm going to stick with the numbers for now. So let me kind of stick with Teresa on the one side, run on the outside of that one as well, and give my number to the vote off for Tevin, and off Tevin went as well. So I kind of was not a whole with Teresa at that point in time, because then we had Pinty, who was playing a very loud game, and she seemed to like Teresa and she liked Felix as well. And I will tell you what derailed, firstly, what derailed us was Teresa and I was me reporting to Tevin. And that's where the whole idol search came from, was me going up to Tevin and saying, Tevin, we're supposed to be in cahoots. I wonder if you know that your name's being thrown out there, that you have the idol. And that's where that came from. Mm-hmm. So he said to me, between the two of us, I think the only thing I can really do is actually hunt for the idol. So I said, well, if you're going to put it out there in the open, you're going to have to own it, because once it's out there, it's out there. Yeah, no, I think I'll do that. So he went out and he put it out to the tribe. Let's look for it. And that's why you see me standing back. And if you watch the camera, I'm making that kind of look at him as if to say, okay, well, that seems like a good play. I hope it doesn't blow up in your face. And he didn't, because he found it. And mm-hmm. So, yeah, he felt liberated by that. But at the same time, like my fears, like I suspected, it put him in the limelight and boom, he was gone as well.
Yeah, in terms of the Tevin vote, like you said, we've heard he was making deals with a lot of different people, so kind of okay to get that done, but you weren't included on that vote. So where did you sit in the dynamics with that, having been, you know, not someone who was in the ruling group who then voted him out? Then we see that you do work in the group who then goes against Seamus next time. So how are you managing all of that?
So, look, I was purely going with the numbers. We didn't have enough time for me to take one on the chin for him or even put myself out there. There was no history. There wasn't anything. So I just went along with the numbers for that one.
For Seamus.
for Seamus as well. Seamus, we linked to Tevin. They were working together. And so I didn't need to be convinced of that one. I could see they were going off together all the time. And in fact, I was working with Seamus as well, because he said to me, Tevin, I'm working with Seamus, but we intend to get rid of him a bit later. So if I don't give you information, Seamus will give you information. And between the two of them, they were bouncing the same information to me at different times. And that's why it was believable. So if he came and said to me, okay, we're looking at maybe voting out, first it was Tanya, then we're looking at voting out, who was the next one to go after that? It was him. But he was gunning for somebody in particular. I'm trying to think.
Pinty?
Yes, it was Pinty. Yeah. Correct. Mm. Yeah. So I was all good for that, because at that point we had gone through about three or four games and I hadn't fared well in the games. I just hadn't fared well. And Felix had taken up with Tariso and Pinty and they were gunning for me, because I said, look, Felix, you can't push me at every game. I'm already pushing myself and I already have that, you know, high standard for myself. Maybe on the outside it looks like I'm not pushing myself, but when I go into the game, it's all a head game for me. So even if you see me visually calm, there's a reason why I'm that way, because that's how I've always behaved before, you know, the storm. So please don't feel like you need to motivate me. And the way he would motivate me, he'd come from behind and give me a bit of a like a rugby kind of a push or a poke with his fingers to say, have you got this in him? Maybe he didn't mean bad, but it became a thing. As well as that dynamic is that I wasn't getting along with Pinty. And they seemed to, you know, form a trio that wanted to get rid of me. Mm-hmm. Already from that point in time. And Tevin knew that. And I'm sure he relayed that to Seamus, because we were working together, the three of us. We weren't doing a lot of negotiations on the daily basis, but we knew, okay, one, two, three, at least the three of us, we need to get maybe two people on board. We can always do that if we need to. And then the Tevin story came out that he was playing all of us and that the greater numbers wanted to get rid of him. So I jumped ship and I thought, well, I'm going to go for the numbers, because I said, keep it simple, stupid, for the first part of the game to get me into merge. And that's what I must stick to, despite feeling loyalty to various people, including Tanya. It was hard to get rid of Tanya because she's a loudmouth, but she's quite a dear when you're around camp with her. It's just mm-hmm. that she goes about it in her own way. So those three vote outs were purely going with the numbers.
Yeah, so you were aware that the Tevin vote was happening at that time?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's a lot of relationships that are going to be, I think, long-term, even coming from Yontao. We'll see, you know, with Pinty, Teresa, and Felix going into the swap. If you're saying they were a bit of a trio and they specifically were the ones that were against you, it was probably quite a bad swap for them that you had other options at that point. What Absolutely. Were you thinking then through the swap? We did see a very important bond with Steffi, and then obviously it does go against Pinty, Teresa at that point.
Yes, but just to mention before I have the tribe swap is Phil. So Phil was a day one and he came to me and he said, if you're in doubt with Tevin or Seamus, I will come and let you know, because I am in with those guys and I hear everything. I said, but I'm worried about Felix, because Felix has never been a fan of mine and I feel like he's already punting. He says, don't worry, I'm in with those guys. I will let you know. So that was my day one, actually, was Phil, was the person nobody knew about. In fact, I will be honest that the shares I had with Phil, as bad as it sounds, were, except for two occasions, not on camera. And the reason is the cameramen were chasing other people and we allowed them to do that. And we said, are you good? Are you good? Yes. What's happening? So full was my day one as a cushion in case I came short with Seamus and Kevin.
Mm-hmm.
So I was playing a very dangerous game. I was running alongside a lot of like turbines that were moving things forward. And I could have easily come unstuck. But lucky for me, the people that said they would give me their word about the numbers gave me their word. And Phil was one of those. And that's how I knew about the Tevin going out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, I think that if the swap had happened differently, maybe if someone like Phil had been there, and we'll definitely talk about those relationships, Dino, as well, that's going to work into the merge. But then, yeah, the swap is with the people exactly that you wouldn't be working with. And you do have a new group with Pony and Taejin as well. So was that a long-term prospect for you? Is that how you saw that kind of new Masu 2.0 group?
I did. I worried when because remember, I was also dealing with Shona, and Shona decided to stay in the other group. So even for her, because we stuck together quite a bit, I lost her. And knowing that when I switched over to Steffi, and we had so much in common, I actually thought we would have a long game going into merge. I did know that at the time. I was, however, very wary because I do feel I read characters better than I juggle numbers. And this is where Dino came in. Dino juggles numbers like a joke. And I said to him, Dino, I can tell you characters by watching them because I'm pretty good at that. So if you ever feel insecure about what you think somebody would do, ask me and I'll tell you more or less how they've been behaving through the camp when they're in a position of instability. How would they possibly vie in terms of their character, not necessarily their numbers? And he said, okay, so that was the camaraderie we had from the beginning. I would try and read the characters and he would give me the numbers and juggle the numbers and kind of keep me in the loop, which he kind of did until very much the end. Mm-hmm. Now, meeting Steffi, I liked all that, but I realized from her personality, she's a very big personality and she does not like to share the limelight. And that's okay. That's who she is. But based on that, I knew at some point I would be 100% disposable because of that. And so I always kept that in the back of my mind. And that's why when you see there is a Steffi vote out, I know that for two reasons. If it's me or her, obviously, like the rest of us, it will be me. And secondly, she's a tenacious sportswoman and that I would not want to face her in the end. I just could not bear to face her. I would lose hands down, strength-wise, and I'd seen it in the previous games. So that's why I said I need to get rid of Steffi if I need to end up in the end. And I need to end up not sitting next to Steffi because I would lose it with the challenge. And then Felix was in the same group with us, so was Pinty. It was great when Pinty went home because we were clashing around every corner. We were just, she's a very sporty person, and if she thinks that there's an aspect of you that she can grab onto and use, obviously to punt whatever she's trying to punt, she will do that. And she will do that openly, and that's what she was doing. Unfortunately for her, she clashed with Steffi. So Steffi made that job and that achievement so much easier just to sit back and watch. To be honest, from the beginning of the game, I sat back. I was involved with a lot of people, but it was me watching the big players take each other out.
Yeah, and you're going to be a big part of that. I mean, you become basically like an honorary member of this breakfast club that formed originally on Masu. You were aligned with Tony and Taejin. They were a big part as well with all of you taking out Pinty and then Teresa.
Correct.
What happened when, you know, Steffi comes to you and kind of says, you know, she has Shane and Marion. We're going to have to talk about the Shane and Marion of it all coming from your first season as well. But kind of you go over to this new power group in what was the original breakfast club now with like auxiliary members, including yourself. What was the thinking in that? Was there any part of you that was like, no, I want to stick with Tony and Taejin? Like, what had the relationship been like with that pair to then have to work with them but then turn on them?
Taejin never, ever trusted him at all, simply because he was also very erratic, also a kind of like a Tanya. When he's scrambling, he doesn't know how to do it quietly. He scrambles loudly and then brings attention to himself. But I knew that because he was in alliance with Tony, but it wasn't a done deal. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been scrambling looking for other people, like myself, for instance. And it's great that he didn't ever really have anything too negative in my character that he saw, only that I was, he thought, loyal to a fault. And unfortunately for him, he read me wrong because I left that loyalty behind in season 5. That was a promise to myself to not be loyal. Like I said, everybody's loyal to themselves, don't owe you a loyalty. And I carried that and I thought, I'll work with him as long as I need to work with him. But I can see the way he's carrying on. He's going to see himself out of this game quite quickly because of that. Tony, exactly the same. Very loud about her approach to people. And you could see, you can read people's body language when they're walking off and how many times they're walking off with somebody. You've got little else to do during sitting on the island besides your tasks once you're done with him. You get to see who's walking off with who. And if you read them long enough, you know that they're in an alliance. There's no doubt about it. What else are they going to go and talk about, just the two of them? So I saw that they were planning together and all of that. And it worked for me because Steppy assured me that they were four. Mm-hmm. And they were taking me on board. So I knew I was in the majority, and I knew that Felix and Pinty were in the minority, and they knew that as well. And obviously, Teresa always gunning to get me out. That was no secret. And that was no secret because she was discussing that with Felix and Pinty in vernacular. Now, having traveled all over Africa, the vernaculars have commonalities. Maybe you, me, she, her, coming, going. Those are commonalities across the vernacular all over Africa. And so you can pick up a general consensus when a group is talking about you. Even in vernacular, you can pick it up. And I knew straight away, oh, I'm on the chopping block here. But I was counting on my alliance with the majority, and I was glad about it. And it played out the way I expected it to play out.
So when you do come to the Palesa vote, and then there's going to be the Tony vote, was there any part of you that wanted to stay on that side, or maybe try and get Steffi to come with you on that side? Because Steffi has a bunch of allies, many of whom you at least haven't met in this game. I mean, Shane, Marion, Meryl, Dante, that's really her ally. So what were you thinking then when Steffi does come to you and is basically saying, like, we're going against the four that we've been working with?
I had no problem with that. But Palesa went, she was on the other tribe. So yeah.
She had been working with Tony, and you had been working with Tony. Yeah.
Yeah. So we had that commonality. And I had no problem, as I said, jumping ship. At some point, as I explained to Nico often in the tribals, is that you have to change your loyalties as you go along. Because if you're not fluid, and that was a big word in Survivor this year, is the fluidity. If you don't have that fluidity or the capability of seeing the fluidity of the game and going with it, you will either be left behind to be booted to the side, or you'll be booted straight off the bat. And so I didn't have a problem with that. I saw my loyalty to Steffi at that point in time, and she had more intel than I had because people trusted her more because she had a better history with them. Remember, these are players coming from season 8 with which I have no common ground, only what I'm developing in the here and now while on season 9. So I had to allow her that and respect that and hopefully use it to my advantage. And I knew because she needed the numbers, she had to be accurate when she was giving me information because it worked well for her. And so based on that, I trusted it and I went with it and I had no problems going with it at all.
Mm-hmm. So there are going to be some new allies for you through that. I'd love to talk about Shane and Marion, who voted you out on Old Utara, who are like long-term working relationships that you have through this merge. What was that reunion of sorts like? And then how did that working relationship evolve through to the very end of the game?
Yes, I wanted to work with Shane, but I was actually afraid of it. I knew at some point I'd have to read him and watch him around camp and see how, if he's resorting to the same kind of verbal use and, you know, his old ways. And in my later in my confessions, I state that he hadn't changed his style of playing the game. He actually hadn't changed his style. And Marion hadn't really changed her style. She just kind of was, she was more active. So she had the same sort of strategic style, but she was more active this time. She didn't rely on others making the moves. Like before, she relied on Shane a lot. this time around, she made it obvious that she wasn't relying on Shane. And when I did speak to her, because they needed my vote when Tajan had that big outburst during Tribal, prior to that, Mary and I were discussing, and I realized that she said to me, when we had that open discussion, I'm with Shane. Go confirm it with him. And that's why you see me walking over to Shane and confirming it. He couldn't confirm it with me. I said to him, Shane, you must confirm that you're working with her in order for me to work with you guys. And he said, I'm so afraid to do that because it's really bitten me in the past. So if Marion says so, Marion says so, I can't confirm it just yet. And that made me fearful. It really did. But prior to that, I wanted to work with him. And we had the game of sandbags in Survivor. And during that time, he tried to make eye contact, even blew me a kiss to say, I'll be working with you. And I thought, oh, that's Shane working it. He's making sure he has somebody on the other side that he's showing, I'm prepared to work with you. And he was doing it in his Shane flamboyant fashion. So much so that I was dreading it. I thought, oh, I hope I'm going to get on train with Shane and that I don't live to regret it. And somewhere close after merge, I realized I just can't bring myself to trust Shane. And he said that to me in the end, you didn't trust me enough. And I just couldn't. I think it was just PTSD from season 5. Mm-hmm. It just was, you know. I actually trusted Marion a little bit more. Longer post-merge.
You touched on another relationship I'm interested in with Tajan going forward into the merge. I mean, we have that four through the swap, but then into the merge, we see that it becomes like a little bit negative. There seems to be like something of a dislike that at least he voices. Can you speak to that a bit? Yes. Like, what was the origin of that kind of dissolution of that relationship?
So, food was becoming a nightmare for Tajan because he was running on empty.
Yeah.
He came into the game exceptionally lean, and I could see that's going to be a problem going into the game because when you're down on reserves, most athletes know that your brain starts getting consumed because it's made of fat. And once that happens, you just don't have the stability you'd like to have in terms of rationale, in terms of tolerance, and all of those things. Not to say he wasn't irrational in the sense that he was just acting loopy. He was just not holding it together the way he should have been. So he was scrambling and around camp, he was difficult to be around, always stealing food. We had that altercation. I said to him, own it. If you want to eat soon, eat now and do like me. Don't eat later. Tell the guys you've eaten your share and they can go ahead and have their share and sit it out because that's when you're feeling empty the most. And yeah, he didn't own it. And it became a little bit of a sore point because I only cooked the rice for me, he and Shane, because we were left at camp. So that's when it kind of started slipping downhill. Then later when he was scrambling, when he realized he wasn't in with the numbers, he was on the outside of the numbers, the majority. He called me aside, so we'd already sort of been not on good terms, and he called me aside and he said, and actually, when you hear me saying that, explaining to him the reason I was throwing him under the bus was not because we were working together, because we weren't working together, but that psychology worked on him. As you can see, he said, oh, great, I like your style, but I was just getting him off my back because I just didn't need that. It was managing the situation. So I treated him a bit like a child because he had reduced himself to behaving that way. And I said to him, Tajan, the reason I threw you under the bus was in actuality because it was the truth. He didn't come on board with eating that rice. And I needed everyone to know that that's the reason I cooked the rice. I ate my share. Tajan popped out and Shane ate with me. So I was owning it so that the tribe doesn't become a sore point, because look, with Pinty, food became a sore point.
Mm-hmm.
And I was famished and I needed some fuel. So I needed to eat when I was hungry and then justify it and do without later on, which I did. So I did throw him under the bus. But to him, I managed it to say, I didn't want them to know we're working together, but we had never worked together. It stopped the moment we merged. When he was scrambling later on, because he was outside of the majority, he stopped me and he said, I'd like to speak to you. Do you understand that you're a goat? I said, oh, no. First of all, he said, you know, I'd like to work with you going forward. And I said, Tejan, you can't come over the hills and say, I have an alliance. Let's work together. And then we're going to skip off into the sunset. You have to give me something concrete. Give me names. Give me numbers that I can, all through the game, I'd actually been able to, the people that come to me, go and confirm those numbers with the people to say, so-and-so, they're working with you. Are you working with them? They had the opportunity to say yes or no. I said, so that's what I've been doing. So if you say you have numbers and you say you have an alliance you're working with, tell me who they are. I can't take your word for it and say, great, I'll ditch all the people that I'm currently working with and I'll just hop on board with you. And yes, we can change the dynamics in this game. What if you don't have anybody and you're just hoping that you're starting together, starting with me? And I can't leave the current alliance I'm with based on that kind of information. So I'm going to give you till tomorrow morning. And then he stops me and he says, but do you realize you're a goat? I said, oh, so you're now, your other tactic is instead of saying you like my style, you think we can work well together, this is how you see the game going. You've now resorted to what I consider insulting me and then trying to get me on board that way. I said, it's not going to work. I don't consider myself a goat because I've negotiated my way all the way through. And I've not just moseyed along with whoever takes me in every direction. I've strategically thought about the choices I've made to date. So the way you're going, it's not the way to get me on your side. If you can by tomorrow, at least I'm giving you the day to go and sit and think about it. And if you have people that you've gathered, come back to me with names tomorrow and then we can talk game again. And that's when you see him walking off. I didn't realize he said, I don't want to work with you because I had, and then there was the whole baby. You know, we're people that don't know each other from a bar of soap in the game of Survivor. There's nothing that warrants you calling me baby in the game, saying, hey, baby, I love your style. I said, oh, this is one person in this world that calls me baby. It ain't you. Don't call me that. And I think that triggered that anger when he walked off. I didn't take on board, immediately jumped to his ship, and then I put him in his place as far as that goes. So when the camera caught him saying, I don't want to work with her, that was after that big altercation.
Definitely.
And then it's downhill from there.
Yeah, an unfortunate personality clash, unfortunate to see. But in terms of some of the moves that we see through the merge, you know, you spoke about why you'd want Steffi out. And we see the move does happen with you not a part of that vote, but you said you're happy they did it for you. It would have been uncomfortable for you to have to pull it off at a point. Where did you 100%. See your role in this? Because we see you talk about like your agency in that vote. We see you talking about it to Shane. Felix later yes. says that he had heard that that was something you wanted. What do you feel you would put in place to be a part of that vote?
So Dino, I, and Phil, we spoke a lot about who should go next. And I said to Dino specifically, I said, Dino, I'd really like to see Steffi go before Meryl. I don't see Meryl as that big a threat, to be honest, from how I read her personality. I read Steffi, she's played a fantastic social game. She's a hell of a social player. And based on that, now that we've had merge, that's a danger, man. We don't have that kind of social skill. She's really in with the numbers because she's just got away with people. She's got that character that's so bubbly and that's so warm. That's why I warmed to her. That's why everybody else warmed to her. And that's a big thing in Survivor. It'll carry you far. And it did. And I warned him. I said, I would prefer to get Steffi out first and then go for Meryl. Let's get Steffi out first. And he says, you know what? It's a general consensus that Meryl's going first. So I said, okay, well, I'll just go with the numbers then, as long as maybe we can get Steffi out after that. Now, I don't know what discussions are going on around. I just know after Meryl, then we were heading for Steffi. So I assumed that it was because of those various conversations I was having of really wanting to get Steffi out of way so that she's not sitting at the end with me, and that worked for my game. So I assumed that I had something in conspiring and in initiating that idea that Steffi is a social player and that she's a bigger danger in my books than Meryl ever was.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know it's a good idea if you're all kind of like having that thought. And it was a great idea because Steffi was such a huge threat at that point. I totally agree.
Yeah.
And then we see as well that you feel that you have a big part of the Meryl move and you are part of that vote. We see more of the pieces being put together on the show by someone like Felix. Where do you feel your work was being done early in that Meryl move and then throughout that move?
The Meryl move, look, the numbers. Without the numbers, honestly, I had a few conversations with Meryl and she wanted to get me on board. And I thought, no, you know what? I'm safer off with the people that I know, the Dinos, the Fulls, even if they frantically run around trying to gather the numbers. I've been working with them for so long. I can't work with Meryl. And I also realized that Meryl is also quite a social butterfly. So I said, I'll go along with that. It was not as big, I didn't play as big a role with Meryl as I did, I feel, with Steffi.
Mm-hmm.
With Meryl, I just went along with the numbers. I don't know. Did I claim that I was at the forefront of the boot of Meryl?
Well, I think we saw a lot in terms of like the unity. I mean, I think we see kind of those two votes in tandem.
Yes.
Yeah. And when we definitely see, you know, the unity that everyone is a part of that vote and knowledgeable about
purely
that, like
numbers.
That blind side. Yeah, for sure.
Yes, and I explained that to Nico. He asked me often, he said, Kilani, what's your vote based on? And I said, you know what, like everyone is saying, there's a general consensus. It would be very stupid of you and not seeing the bigger picture if you didn't go with the general consensus where you saw fit to do that. The only time that I can say I didn't go with the general consensus, where's the time I didn't go with the general consensus, was towards the end of the game. Then we were playing our own game. And if three people thought so-and-so should come out and you didn't want to be sitting at the end with so-and-so, then you would say, well, I don't think that's a good plan because that person is a strong player. For example, I'll give you an example. Phil and Felix. Felix approached me and he said, do you want to work with me? And I said, yes. But I didn't trust him. But I said, if Phil is on board, if Dino's on board and you've taken me on board, then we've got numbers. I don't mind working with you. But I could see he wasn't buying my story. He said to me, what would be the reason for you wanting us four to be in the end? I said, well, from an athletic point of view, I think we're all people that don't have fear. Fear is not part of our personality. And I wound him the whole game of, you're a rugby player, you go into rugby. It's such a dangerous game. You always get knocked left, right, and center, and you can come out of there paralyzed. So for that reason, I wouldn't mind facing you in the end in terms of the solidarity and may the best man win. Because it's such a good story from a story perspective. I said the same thing to Phil. I said, Phil, you're a fireman. This was me trying to get them on board so that the four of us, Dino, myself, Felix, and Phil, go to the end.
Mm-hmm.
With Dino, I had that history. I didn't think I had to convince him too much if we had the numbers. But that's the story I went to Phil with. I said, Phil, you're a fireman, man. You're like me. I go into a ring and I fight somebody. I can't have fear. If I have fear, I put it in my back pocket and I ignore it. You're the same. You go into a burning building. You've had that history. You face fire. You face fear. And I respect that. And I don't mind facing you in maybe the final game of the season because it's such an epic story to have at least four people that are fearless. They come from such an athletic background. With Dina, I was just hoping he was going to get bought with the numbers. And I never got the opportunity to see that awesome story in the end. And with me being the only woman, with three other athletes, me being an athlete, I love the idea. And I really tried to sell them the idea. But I could see Felix wasn't sold because he still had that niggling, I want to get rid of Kilani. I really don't want to work with her. And I knew he was bluffing because Dino said to me, just trust what I'm saying. Don't just take for granted what the rest are saying. I'm going to give you the numbers, where the numbers are going to go. And you make up your mind when it comes to the vote. And I did the same thing that I did to Tejan, to Felix. I said, yes, yes, yes. You know, I didn't trust you before, but I wouldn't mind working with you now. It's just managing it.
Mm-hmm. is that how this four kind of came to be, where we do see that you, Shane, Marin, and Dino kind of become the new ruling group, kind of through seven, but then more through six, and then it's all going to kind of fall off a cliff? But is that where it happened, where Dino kind of brought you those numbers and you kind of saw that group consolidate?
Absolutely, absolutely. We'd often go to the water well, we go to the beach and sit, and I said, Dino, numbers, give me numbers. If you can explain the numbers to me, I will try and see the rationale in terms of personality and where we're heading. And I watch the people enough. They go and come and go and come. And let's put our heads together with that. Whether he was buying my intel or my intelligence or not was irrelevant. He was, at the end of the day, giving me the numbers, and I could make sense of the numbers. It made sense up until then. And yes, I think that's how that dynamic came together.
Mm-hmm. And then we didn't see any fallout, but I'd love to know from you. You are a group who's voting together. You're this four. But then when Phil wins immunity and they're scared about him using his idol maybe for Felix, they split on you. And Dino actually uses one of his two votes against you. Shane and Marion vote against you, and then they don't vote you out on the revote. Was there fallout from that? Like, what is the breakdown maybe of that group when you've been used as a split vote target who very well could have gone home on that vote?
There wasn't too much of a fallout there. What was the main fallout? Let me try and think. The fallout between, well, not the fallout, per se. It was my misgivings when Dino wins the car and he gets to take somebody on that little picnic with all the snacks and that. And at that point, I was honestly on my last. Nutritionally, and just needing a boost of some sort. And I felt up until then that I thought that I was working that closely with Dino, is that surely he should have chosen me to go and strategize a little bit more and bring me into whoever else he chooses to go with the fold, because then we would have a continued relationship. And that's when I kind of started realizing that Dino is splitting and going in another direction from me. I just sensed it. And I couldn't take him out at that point, because his explanation for taking Marion at that point in time was she's the only one that didn't do a food reward. So he'd already explained himself, and he probably would have repeated himself. I don't think I was going to get any other explanation out of that. So I just actually didn't even broach the subject at all. But I knew already then he was deviating. And I knew that going on that kind of a reward, they would sit and they would talk. So I started to feel unstable at that point in time. I think Phil realized that. And then we spoke a bit, Phil and I, and he said, look, no, I'll always come and give you the intel, because I'm working with all of them. And that's why you see at some point in Survivor, it didn't come into the edit, but I'm lying in camp when Phil comes into camp and he searches through Marion's bag. And he doesn't realize I'm lying there. And then I indicate to him, I go, and he turns around and sees me lying there. And he gets a shock, because he didn't realize I was watching him fiddling in Marion's bag. I could have used that. And I could have gone to Marion and said, Marion, you can't trust Phil. He's searching in your bag for the idol. And did you know that? Or you know, a clue. And he found it. He even showed it to me. And he put it back in the bag. Now, it was just too risky because of the history of the Shane and Marion duo to now go to Marion and say, right, I could have taken the risk. They could have taken the information and used it to get Phil out and then still get me out. Whereas I could have not used it, which I didn't, keep the intel coming from Phil and keep me on the right side of the numbers. And hopefully, like I was trying to get Marion out after that, that would work, not knowing that he too was working with Marion.
Yeah, we do see you guys actually vote together in the vote where you go home. You both vote for Dino. We had seen it more that you were going for Marion. He's going for Dino. Where did it come to be that you were voting for Dino, and who did you think would be on that Dino vote?
I thought, you know, because Dino came to me acting extremely insecure, I thought it had changed. I thought, I've got to make a last minute change here. He's, for Dino to act insecure, he must know that the numbers are against him. And so I'm going to have to go with that general consensus to stay in there. And that's what made my mind up to go with that. but I did want to get rid of Marion. They just, I realized that he's acting too insecure. Maybe he's going home, so I'll go with the numbers. So I went with the numbers for that one.
Mm-hmm. And of course, that does lead to you going home on the Shane, Marin, and Dino votes. I wanted to ask more broadly just about like the experience of watching it back and the impact of that. I mean, we do hear so much about your story, about how you're keeping it from everyone. I mean, I've spoken about like how strategically difficult it is, that burden, that disconnection you can have from other people when you're kind of trying to hold this thing and not share it with them and really just giving it to the camera for the audience to be helped and moved by that. So I would just love you to, if you can, look at it with more of a bird's eye view and what that experience was like and what it's even been like since in kind of, yeah, being this representation for something so difficult in that, but also having to experience it with that difficulty where you're not even relying on other people or leaning on them because you're not telling them through the game about the losses that you had through before the game.
Often in the game, it distanced me from people where I had to, if they were talking about family, I made small comments like, oh yeah, I also had a time like that with my mom and all that. And then I distanced myself so that I'm not excluding myself from the conversation, but I'm putting only enough input into the conversation to look like I'm a part of the conversation, but having to distance myself and take care of a task around the camp so that I don't become emotionally drawn to discuss it, because the human passion overrides everything. And if you're reeled in enough, you can, without even wanting to drop the bombshell, you can do it because it is such a strenuous environment. So that was my tactic throughout the game. It didn't make the edit, but I often had a small input and then I would just sort of blend into the background and carry on with tasks so that I'm not out of the discussion. And that's how I managed to rein all of that information in. It's a very heavy burden to carry. And I would use the night times and the early hours of the morning on the beach or in the hammock that I used all the time at camp to just regroup and ground myself and say, today was a hard day. They discussed moms today and it was really tough, especially after that challenge where Phil was allowed to talk to his family. Marion wanted to talk to her mum and it was a mum discussion. And I had to really, you know, hold myself from not bursting into full-blown tears and just having a crying session. It was hard. And I had many of those occasions going through Survivor. So from that aspect, it was very difficult. And it was a great outlet to be able to share that with the public and also do what I set out to do, to commiserate with those that have been through something similar and also maybe inspire those that are on the edge of really feeling that they had no hope. And so really the forum was perfect for me in that sense. And the outlet to allow myself to be emotional were many. I mean, the content managers allowed that very often, so many times that I thought, oh, I hope this is not all airing. Otherwise, I'm really going to be looking like a basket case and a wreck. But they chose the best moments to share with the public, and I'm very appreciative of that.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely was some of the more moving content that we've seen, because your story and your resilience as well is something that's so amazing. I mean, you said on the show that, you know, the show kind of pushed you to go on at times that were so tough, unthinkable times that I can't even imagine. How do you look back at the experience now through the whole journey of it being asked to come back through the game? Now watching it back, getting so close as well to the end and being able to play so much of the game after, you know, fewer days in Champions for sure. How do you look back at the whole experience now?
It was liberating and it was therapeutic from an emotional perspective. So from a physical perspective, that was emotional. So from a physical perspective, you know, it leans to contributing to a little bit of a fragile emotional perspective, because after that mud patch game, I fell apart. Mentally, I fell apart. I thought, I pride myself on the games. What am I going to do? I literally, Shannon, I limped my way through every single game. Anything that had running, anything that had impact was just excruciating, because what was happening now is the ligaments that keep the knee in were flex. They weren't keeping the knee in, that it was shooting out of place and coming back in, shooting out of the place. As long as I ran in a straight line and I turned at 90 degree angles, I was safe. But the moment I twisted in any way, it was popping. So we played about 7 games after that. It popped out a few times every single game. So emotionally, the pain and knowing that my tribe is now seeing me as the weakest link. Because remember, whichever tribe I'm on, until the very end of merge, where we're now playing our own games, you're playing as tribes and you're looking like you're not pulling your worth. And I tried and I thought, I'm going home. And as fate would have it, I didn't go home. So it was very liberating in that the social connections I made with the people that I made along the way and the reliability of my vote saved me in the game. Because that's what they spoke about a lot on my team, my tribe members, that Kilani gives you a vote. She's pretty reliable. Go get that vote. You'll get it. And they got it as long as I saw my end game, it working with my end game. The Steffi, the Merrills, the big players that would have offered me a hell of a run for my money with a bad knee and a bit of a fragile mind as well. Even though I came across as strong, I had to fight those demons daily.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, there is no words to kind of put into perspective what that must be like to go through the other things people are going through, challenges, social games, strategy, but with a deficit being the loss that you had endured and also not being able to tell people. I mean, there's lying in the game, but then there's keeping that secret all the time and then having to really bridge those gaps. And I really do think that that is an incredible strategic feat, let alone obviously the strength and humanity and things that you've shown in that. That is, yeah, just really, really incredible to see. And I think probably affected a lot of viewers. But I'm so grateful we got this opportunity, Kilani, to discuss more of your game and get some of your insights. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast and for letting the listeners know some things that they didn't know about your game.
It's a pleasure. I hope that they can see now where my mind was at when I was doing certain things.
Yeah, I mean, it can be hard. It can be hard to put it all into the episodes, even though we do have a more extended runtime. It's really not long enough. So it's great to get this extra content and to hear some of those other little relationships, as we'll hear throughout the week as well, I'm sure, with Phil and Dino, as you discussed. It's very interesting to hear those little bonds that we don't see that have such a big impact. But thank you so much again for coming on the podcast. It was great to chat to you.
It's a pleasure. And Dino says hi, must say hi to you.
I'm sure I'll talk to him soon. Not in essence, absolutely not, but I'll probably just text him now. But thanks so much, Kilani.
It's a pleasure, Shannon. Take care.
Thank you. There you have it, everyone. Hope you enjoyed that conversation. A lot of stuff that was really interesting from the game and obviously something we didn't really get to hear as much about with Kalani's edit. So always great to get those additional insights from the exit interviews. Didn't really get to get into any of the jury stuff because at the time, this was earlier last week and I actually hadn't seen that yet, but I'm sure we'll get into a lot of the jury stuff with the deep divers as well. So the season, it's over, but also it lives forever. And also the postseason content is going to be much like the preseason content and the actual season content. OTT, because that's what we do here at RHAP. If you're listening to this, hopefully that's something you enjoy. We appreciate you for joining in on the madness. We're worried about you, but we also do appreciate you. So thank you so much for being here with us. Please subscribe to the International Survivor Hap-Ups feed so you don't miss any of the deep dives, because that's something you don't want to do. Follow us at Shannon Gates, at AmyBloomType. Any star ratings you can give, any reviews. We are loving talking about the season with the community, and it's been such a great time. So thank you so much for listening. I will see you on the next deep dive, which will be with Dino. Until then, keep evolving. Bye.
Australian Survivor is a
Survivor New Zealand.
Survivor.
21 South Africans.
12 ordinary Australians.
16 New Zealanders.
1 million pounds.
Million euro.
Million.
Rubli.
Tribe spoke.
Shiva Tokere.
Shiva.
Tribe spoke.
For the adventure of a lifetime.
The adventure of a lifetime.
Adventure of a lifetime.